Today is Tuesday, November 13th, and this is episode 71 of the Birdland BS podcast. This week, we're going to get into some bye week drama. Will the Bengals end the Ravens season again? And the Terps miss out on a big opportunity. Stay tuned.
So let's take it to the Birdland. That Baltimore home flavor is coming firsthand. Fred, Scott, and Ryan, tell them the word, man. Mixing a little BS to make it work, man. Sports, they got it. Want excitement, the topic. Make sure when they toss you the ball, you don't drop it. With all that swag, you're gonna listen regardless. Here comes the pitch, so it's time to get it started. It's Birdland BS.
What's going on, BSers? Episode 71. Fred and Ryan in the studio today.
Oh.
It's been a while, Ryan.
I know.
Scott is enjoying the better things in life. Still down in what, Siesta Key, Florida there, Scott?
Yeah, Siesta Key, right around the corner from Ed Smith Stadium, the Orioles spring training facility.
Nice, nice. Good old Birdland reference there, Ed Smith Stadium.
Yeah.
But I think you're enjoying the finer things of the warm weather, the blue water, and the white beaches a little more than you are Ed Smith Stadium.
Just a little bit.
It's going to suck for you to have to come back to this crappy weather we got coming. Apparently, they're calling for some ice and some snow here on Thursday. So I know you're coming back here in a couple days. It'll be fun for you to come back to that.
Yeah, I'll get to fly back tomorrow. Hopefully, flights don't get delayed or anything coming across there. So we'll see.
Yeah, man, for sure. Ryan, it's been a while, brother.
Yeah, yeah.
How's life been? Good?
Good. Just got back from Bermuda. So
nice, man. All you guys coming from all these warm places.
I was at work.
Keeping my ass here in Florida. Keeping in Maryland.
I was there four nights.
It was quote unquote work, Ryan.
It was work. I did work hard one day.
Never been to Bermuda.
The other couple. Oh, Bermuda's great. It's not like a... So I'd never been there. I had no clue. But it's not like a third world. Like, it's not like Dominican where you, like, you get on the island and you run from the airport to the resort.
Right.
It's basically, like, the whole island. Like, we were walking around everywhere. And the roads are very narrow, so it's a little sketchy.
Right.
And, like, it's like there's a road, and then the edge of the road is like a wall or something. It's never like a sidewalk usually. Some places there are sidewalks, but there were definitely like some sketchy turns where you're like creeping around. And then,
my anxiety would be going through the roof.
You're like, so you're on like the road, the opposite side of the road is what they drive on from here. So like you're always like thinking like, am I on the right side of the road? Or if they come, what corner are they going to come around real fast and hit me?
Right.
But the weather was great. It was like 75, 80 every day and sunny, no rain, no snow.
I would love that. But no,
beautiful view. We
deal with the 40s and the 50s here and the bad weather approaching. But nonetheless, hey, look, on a positive note, the Ravens didn't lose this week.
No, they did not.
If we can pull any positives, right. It's Ravens didn't lose.
Let's not get too optimistic here, Fred. Come
on. Look, after a 3-game losing streak, I think we got to pull at any positivity that we possibly can. Everybody still has their jobs. Nobody was fired as of yet.
No.
And I don't think that that's going to be the case. But there's been some rumors of some changes and some rumors of some things injury wise that, may throw a wrench into some things.
Yeah.
We'll kind of get into that as we, prepare this week for the Bengals. The arch nemesis Bengals that tend to always give us problems. This could be yet another year that the season lays in the hands of the Bengals.
Yeah, it's a little earlier than you'd like compared to last season, but yeah, absolutely. They already kind of schooled us once.
Yeah, punched us in the mouth.
Yeah, so that was a big disappointment. And now they have... in their corner, Hugh Jackson. So you have that threat to worry about.
And his
about.
Attractive resume as a head coach.
Yeah.
I don't even think they named a position for him yet. I don't know what his role is going to be.
He's like, I saw, Pro Football Talk on Twitter. They were making fun of it because it's like the special assistant to the head coach. So they were kind of like, what is he, like Dwight Schrute or something, like assistant to the manager or something like that.
Oh, good God.
And everybody had like Dwight Schrute memes. But yeah, I guess they're like best friends though, him and Hugh. So,
oh, man, that's great. Scott, you been paying attention to things while you're down there in Florida? You've been listening to the news?
A little bit here and there. I've been paying attention to some of the stuff that the Ravens have put across, but not as much. Been a little bit more focused on the beach and the kiddo, so okay. The family and spending time. So, but I have been keeping up as much as I can, kind of flipping through at the end of the night, you know, as I'm going to bed and what's going on, and trying to hear all the rumors going on with Harbaugh. You know, I know we're going to get into all those rumors, but we'll see what winds up happening.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're going to open up that can, let's go there. Obviously, that's kind of been the big story. With
before we do, Fred, I want to give a quick shout out to our listeners on the side of things for our sponsor.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you want to get us started there.
Yeah, man. This week's episode brought to you by John Scheffenacher of Cummings & Co. Realtors. Are you looking to buy or sell your home? Do you want someone you can trust to go to bat for you? Go see our guy, John Scheffenacher, over at Cummings & Co. Realtors. John's been in the business for 4 years now. It's dedicated to getting you the best deal possible. Always willing to take your call and be available for you anytime, day or night. For you Birdland fans out there, you may know him as the sunglass guy sitting behind the dugout at Camden Yards. So give John a call at 443-604-6298.
And yeah, Fred, my wife and I actually used John when we bought our house about 3 years ago. He's always willing to take your call. Heck, we called him on vacation about seeing a house. He got us into that house, and that's the house we actually wound up buying. And he continues to take care of his clients. Not only is he a strong negotiator, but he takes care of his clients at the client events that he has, as well as it's Thanksgiving coming up. He's already texted me about what kind of pie I want. He's going to hand deliver a pecan pie to my house.
That's pretty sweet.
You know, I love me some pecan pie, man. It's always good talking to him. So don't hesitate. Give John a call today at 443-604-6298 or email him at johnscheffa@gmail.com. That's johnscheffa@gmail.com. And don't forget to mention that Birdland BS was the one that sent you.
Speaking of Birdland, so I'm going to address a comment real quickly. Nikki, she says, I'm dressed like a Steelers fan. And I can see why you would think that, because it looks like in the video feed that this sweatshirt I'm wearing is yellow, when in fact it is orange. So I guess the lighting in here and the cameras are picking this up
Ryan,
as a yellow. No, this is not BS. Ryan, come on now. You gotta.
It's definitely orange.
It's orange. It's orange. As bright as orange could be. But yeah, so
it's like podcasting with a big old pumpkin.
It makes it hard to believe when you got orange behind you, Fred.
It's definitely a different shade of orange than that, but yeah, it is orange. It's not yellow. I wouldn't be doing that.
I think you're going to have to post a picture for our listeners to prove it. I'm just saying.
Nikki says Ryan would never lie, so
yeah.
That's very true. But yeah, man, let's get into this a little bit. So you brought up the Harbaugh situation, and that's kind of been the big talk during this past week. Is the rumors have been circling that the Ravens are headed to, and Ravens and John Harbaugh are headed to, a mutual parting of ways after the season. There have also been some rumors that
mutual my hind end.
What's that?
Mutual my hind end.
Well, I'll kind of give you my opinion on it real quickly. I don't think anything with this is news. Like, none of this changes anything that we thought going into this year. You know, going into this year, this was kind of a do or die year for not just John Harbaugh, but John Harbaugh, Joe Flacco, this whole regime. And yeah, of course, rumors are going to start circling right now because the Ravens are on the brink of being eliminated from playoff contention. So, you know, Jason Lock and Four put out this report that there's been rumors going around. I don't think this is any different. You know, the one thing I thought maybe they may do is they might make an in-season move, which would be really surprising. It's not something that typically the Ravens do. It's not their style.
I don't see them doing that.
Yeah, I don't see them doing that at all either.
I don't think there's any benefit.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what I was getting ready to say is that unless you have a guy that's available right now that you see for your future and you don't want to lose out on that guy, that you want to go after him right now, then that makes sense. But you can't go after a guy that's on an active roster right now as a coach because that would be tampering. So it would have to be somebody that's unemployed, or it'd have to be somebody that is in the college ranks.
On a different level.
Yeah, at a different level. So, and even then...
I hear DJ Durkin for a job.
Oh,
God. Yeah. That's not gonna happen. That would be taboo around here. Definitely not happening here, that's for sure. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense why they would do that. And it doesn't kind of fall in line with Bisciotti's plan and his actions and temperaments from things in past. If anything was going to happen, I thought it would have happened prior to this season. I would have thought it would have happened at the end of last season, especially the way last season ended. And we, Scott, you and I talk about this pretty much on a weekly basis, my feelings behind Harbaugh. I feel that I like Harbaugh as a person. I think kind of that Buck Showalter effect, you know, he kind of had an expiration date on him. He's beyond his expiration date now. And I think that they need a change in leadership. What's your take on the whole rumor situation, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, I think they do need a change in leadership at this point. It showed that, you know, it showed this week, and I know we're going to get into this a little bit, but it goes right into what I've said, that Harbaugh not only is that past his expiration date, but he's past control of this team. The fact that he gave the team off a week on the bye week, you gave them off completely. You have RG3, who I know isn't playing, but he's down here in Miami and makes TMZ about his wife and her ring and how big it is and how huge it is on his salary. But the fact is that he isn't able to handle this team anymore. I question if there are some potential locker room, I don't want to say issues, but questioning of some decisions that they're making and him not stepping up, things like that. So I think it just depends on, where you go. I would disagree that I think you do need to get somebody in here. I know you can't necessarily go and pull somebody off of another team, but you need to do one of two things. You either need to be looking now actively, or you need to have somebody in mind.
And I don't disagree with you. I think that they are looking for somebody. I think that process has already started as far as planning for the future, but to actively say that, you know, they should make a move right now and make the change right now, I can't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't
see it. The only reason I don't see them doing it, honestly, but the reason I say that they should be moving in that direction, whether it's a college coach or, you know, somebody that's kind of sitting off doing something else, is for the simple fact that he's lost control, and whoever comes in, you know, you're taking over Lamar Jackson, period. At this point, I know the fans are calling for it. Some people are going to be saying, oh, well, it's not Joe. I think at this point, we can all kind of agree with the way Joe has been playing. He hasn't been stepping up as much as he needs to be. He started to at the beginning of the year. He hasn't. But whoever needs to come in, this would be the perfect time to bring that person in to work with Lamar. Have, you know, Lamar be out there a little bit more, but be under RG3. So that he can see RG3 do it, let him show him the ropes, let him go through. And then RG3 also becomes a component that maybe later on you can keep him as a tutor, you know, as we've said before, as that tutor. I don't think Joe's going to continue next year, but that's where the Harbaugh situation, it relates back to that, because while it's not in the Ravens' cards to ever fire somebody, and Bisciotti has come out and said that he doesn't hire and fire people, you know, that's not how he grew his business. But at the same time, you do have to recognize when is it straight to cut ties with somebody. Again, do I think they're going to do it? No. Do I think they should? If the right person's there. If the right person's there, it's absolutely the right move to make.
And I think you're on the same page.
Stubborn, you could be missing out.
I think you're on the same page that I'm on. I mean, it's exactly what I said, is basically if you have a guy that's there that isn't employed right now and isn't going to cause you to get in trouble with tampering, then yeah, okay, maybe you make that change right now. I don't see a guy out there that's available now. And that's what was going to be my next question. I don't really know. We haven't talked in a while, so I don't really know what your feelings are on the entire Harbaugh situation. Are you a fan of Harbaugh? Do you think he's at the end of his rope? What's your opinion, Ryan?
I think Harbaugh is a decent coach. I think you could do a lot worse.
Yeah.
But with as many opportunities as he's been given the past couple of seasons, I think it was – basically well known at the beginning of the season when Bisciotti came out and had his press conference. Hey, you know, I thought about it the prior season and we just missed it. You know, end of the year, last game of the season, we get knocked out of the playoffs. This season, you're halfway through and you're in the same situation that you were in at the end of the season last year. So you're a little bit ahead of the curve as far as, hey, this team's going to be out of contention if we lose this game. So I think at this point, if we get knocked out of the playoffs this early, then you just know that at the end of the season, that decision's been made.
Right.
That Harbaugh is going to be gone. Because if he gets in another situation like he did last year where you're week 17, final game of the season, and you get knocked out, he probably buys himself another year. But I think some of the rumors you're hearing where it's going to be a mutual split, I think that Harbaugh knows and the Ravens know that, hey, if we can't make it past week 11, then this is a done deal.
Yeah. I think at this point, we can all 100% agree, and we knew this going into the year. If the Ravens don't make the playoffs this year, that's the end of Harbaugh and the Harbaugh era.
Well, right? I think if it came down to a week 17, like game 60, like you're in your final game and you lose it. Mm-hmm. On the final play, like that's a different scenario. But I think this early in the season, it's a done deal if we lose this week.
Here's my broader take on the entire thing. So looking at it from both sides of the fence, looking at it from Bisciotti's standpoint and the ownership standpoint, and looking at it from Harbaugh's standpoint, right? Harbaugh is going to have another opportunity somewhere else if it's not here.
He's a decent coach.
He's still regarded as a good coach from the outside. We get to see all the inner workings, and we get to nitpick at a lot of the things that we don't like about this guy. But when you look at his resume and when you look at what he's done as a head coach and what he brings to a locker room and that kind of thing, it's attractive for a lot of other organizations out there. At the end of this season, there's going to be a lot of teams looking for a head coaching job. Denver's going to have an opportunity, and Denver's already had reports out there that Harbaugh, if he were to get let go, would be high on their list. Mm-hmm. You got the New York Jets and the Bowles situation there. That's Todd Bowles. That's going to be gone at the end of the year. Miami, Cleveland, now they don't know who they're bringing in. Possibly, maybe even Harbaugh goes to the college ranks, kind of like his brother did financially. That would make a lot of sense. And, you know, he'll have a lot of opportunities there at the college level. So for me, if I'm looking at it from Harbaugh's standpoint, I know that
a college job, by the way.
Well, I wouldn't say never, because
he doesn't. No, here's why he won't get offered a college job. I shouldn't say he won't take it. He won't get offered a college job because he doesn't have the background of being able to go out and the recruiting background of being able to go out to these parents' houses and stuff like that. He doesn't have a recruiting background. He's always been a special teams guy. We've always known that. He did a good job, but he's not a college style coach.
I get that as far as he doesn't have the recruiting background, but that's the only thing he doesn't have on his resume. He's got everything else, and he can bring a staff in around him that can help him with the recruiting process. There's a lot of other colleges out there that are going to be in the market. And I can think of one off the top of my head that would make a whole lot of sense for a whole lot of reasons would be Notre Dame. If Notre Dame ended up getting rid of their head coach at the end of the year, Harbaugh's got a lot of, you know, religious ties and that kind of thing. And he's just a good person. And I feel like that's something that Notre Dame looks for in their head coaching. They're kind of really picky on who they bring in there and who they don't. And he could build something around that as far as a recruitment hurdle. He doesn't have anything negative keeping him from being able to recruit thing. He's got a strong, like, resume. It's going to have a lot of appeal to
his
younger
family
people.
Name in general is
exactly
tied to college football.
So exactly. I'm not saying that's where he's going to go. I'm just saying it's another venue. It's another opportunity that he's going to have. My point in saying this is that he's going to have offers out there for 4 and 5 years. If he just hurdles on the fence at the end of the year for the Ravens, no way does Eric DaCosta offer Harbaugh a 4 or 5 year deal and invest another 4 or 5 years of a process as a new GM, basically coming in with Harbaugh. He doesn't do, there's no way he does that. If anything, he does exactly what you said, makes him the 1 year offer. Yeah. And it's kind of on another like win or lose type basis, whether we extend you past that. And if I'm looking at that from Harbaugh, why am I going to take a 1 year deal when I can get a 4 or 5 year deal from another team that's, you know, that's that values me more and is going to commit to me more. Mm-hmm. So I don't see that happening. So I ultimately think at the end of the day, this is the end for Harbaugh mm-hmm. in Baltimore. I also think that kind of opens up to our next topic, and we'll get into that, is the Flacco situation. We'll obviously talk a little bit about, you know, the injury that came out this week and how serious is it, and how, what does this mean for the team moving forward? I know, Scott, you had already kind of mentioned Lamar Jackson and him taking over, and is that the right move for this team right now? Should it be RG3, not Lamar? Like, what are we doing here? And here's my thing. Right now, we're not mathematically eliminated. Right. No, so
it's probably not even close.
Right. In my opinion, you have to put in the quarterback that's going to give this team the best chance to win mm-hmm. and win now. And I don't think that's Lamar. I think that if it's not Joe because of the injury, I think the quarterback that gives us the best opportunity right now is RG3. And it's not because I think RG3 is ultimately a better quarterback than Lamar or anything like that. I think Lamar is going to play out to be a better pro than RG3 if they give him that opportunity to grow the way he needs to grow. He's mm-hmm. not ready right now. We've made that.
Yeah.
We've had that discussion, and we've talked about that end on end. I think it's too risky to throw him out there and have him set up for failure in a high pressure situation. You put him out there and his first NFL start is basically a do or die game, whether we make the playoffs or don't make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. What's your opinion on that?
I think you gotta, if Flacco's out, I don't care who goes out there. Honestly.
Okay.
I think it takes a little bit of the pressure off of him if Flacco's injured and he's playing the game because Flacco's injured. And I do think he can win a game. You see it. I mean, we're at the games and we're kind of like complaining. You know, Joe Flacco's doing a drive and then they bring in Lamar and it's like ruins the momentum. But then you see it also where Joe Flacco can't get in the end zone. You bring Lamar out and then he rushes for a TD.
Right.
I think the kid's capable, but as far as I'm concerned, this season, whether or not we make it to the playoffs doesn't really matter to me at this point, because I don't think you're going to go very far. I think if you make it into the playoffs, you're going to play one game, and then you're going to be back out.
Right.
You'll be sitting on the couch. So at this point, if you think this kid's the future, I'd like to see him out there, and you say to him, hey, this is in your hands. It doesn't really matter right now if we win or lose, but go out there and win the game. Do the best you can. And that's all you can ask of them. And you say, we're not putting any pressure on you. We just want you, you know, to grow as a player and to get better. And that's what this is. And I'm just tired of being mediocre. I'm tired of being in the middle. I mean, we're 4 and 5, middle of the season. We're going to get a middle of the first round pick again, probably like 16, 17 at this point.
Right.
And it's so much easier when you're really good and you're winning, or you're really, really bad and you're getting that draft pick early.
Right.
But for me, it doesn't matter who's out there next week, whether it's Joe or Lamar. But if Lamar's out there, I'm perfectly fine with it. But I think you just stick with that through the rest of the season.
Scott, what's your take?
Yeah, for me, I mean, it's got to be in my opinion, it's got to be RG3. And here's the logic behind it. You're taking a huge risk by putting Lamar out there. You're calling Lamar, if in fact this is what they're doing, they're calling Lamar their quarterback of the future, by putting him out there and risking injury because of the way he's been playing. I mean, Fred and I have talked about it. Ryan, I don't know your take on it, but he's been playing a little loose. And when I say that, he's taking risks that are not calculated. They're not, they're not completely thought out. They're very like in the moment type risks. It's very college-esque. And you can't do that in the NFL. We've proven that. I mean, I actually just watched a video the other day of the hit that Kiko Alonso gave Joe Flacco on a slide. You know, when Joe gave
this
up,
last
gave
season
up and hit and yeah, and when Kiko okay. not basically knocked him out. You know, and that type of situation with a guy like Lamar, who's got a little bit smaller frame than Joe, he's going to get destroyed, and he's going to get destroyed quickly. If he's going to run the ball, they've got to develop an offense around him that can handle that. And I hate to say it this way, but RG3 is your prep guy for the rest of the team to bring in Lamar, because he can roll out. He can do those things, and he can know when he needs to take that little bit more calculated risk and when he shouldn't. And then you have Lamar, you know, learn from that. If they're tag teaming Lamar and RG3, I probably have less of a problem with that than I would if you're tag teaming if you're tag teaming Lamar and Joe. So I think RG3 gives you the best shot. He's a little bit more proven. We've only seen Lamar in short, what, three drive, I think, is the long, or three play spurts is the longest we've seen him on the field,
right?
In any given time. So you don't know how he performs. What if he gets out there the first drive, he kills it, great. Second drive, they figure him out. They're able to read him and then just get to him all day and are able to, you know, intercept the ball, do whatever. So it's going to be a telling time. I think you have to get him out there at some point, but I think you ease him into it. You can't just throw him out there and say you're starting. I don't think that's the way to go.
And that's the other thing. So if Lamar mm-hmm. is the quarterback to start this week, and you know, If we're agreeing on this, we know that at season's end, Harbaugh's gone, which means a lot of the staff around Harbaugh's gone, which means Marty's not going to be back because whoever the next head coach is going to want to bring in his own offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. Do you want this staff handling your quarterback, quote unquote, of the future right now? Or do you wait and buy your time with RG3 until the end of the year, when you have a new staff in place with a new offensive coordinator who's going to work with Lamar and actually develop Lamar for the future? Do you want this staff potentially possibly ruining your quarterback of the future?
I mean, going in, if you go back to last season, you know, I think the big surprise to me is that we kept Marty Morningwig, because as an offensive coordinator, I think we were all like, why did we keep him?
Right.
But... You know, so I would assume, yeah, you're gonna clean house.
Yeah.
So I honestly, you can protect our what's his name?
Lamar.
Getting them all mixed up as much as you want, but eventually he's gonna have to play.
I get that.
So
but is week 9 or week 10 in his first season the right time? I mean, I know. When is the right time? There's not really a guide to it. Yeah. There's not a quarterback 101 book, but here's the thing: you look at all the quarterbacks that went before him in this draft. Mm-hmm. Other than the little bit of success that Baker Mayfield has had, none of them have had any success this year, including Darnold, Allen. You know, Rosen. None of them have had any success, and I understand it's a big adjustment. They got to go through their bumps. They got to go through their bruises, that kind of thing. And at some point, Lamar's going to have to go through that. I get that.
They're all also on pretty crappy teams.
Yeah, no, so, that's definitely true, too. Every situation is a little bit different.
Maybe Lamar Jackson wakes up feeling dangerous and, you know, he goes out there and he destroys.
There's the Baker reference there. I don't know. It's just
Ryan.
Good, Scott.
Ryan brings up a good point, though. You know, they're all on bad teams, and that is true. But what is one thing that all those teams have in common on offense? And the answer is poor offensive line play for the majority of the season.
Yeah.
And the Ravens fall in that category. Look at how quickly guys are, you know, the defenses are getting to Joe Flacco. He's scrambling a lot more. That's where Lamar will come in, or RG3 will be able to come in and kind of get out of that scramble, whereas Joe stays in that pocket. But at the same time, it's going to be happening quicker. So you're going to have to get that ball out.
You know,
you're going to have to be able to, you know, be able to do it on the move.
I know, like, the line is a, like, players or quarterbacks that get a lot of time to throw the ball, you know, they do a lot better if their line's good. But Joe Flacco has a lot of time pretty frequently.
Yeah.
And he still doesn't make a play. But I go back to the first game when Baker Mayfield came in and Tyrod Taylor was playing like crap. It was, and then Baker Mayfield came in and like everything opened up. So I don't know that'll Baker Mayfield's pretty good in my opinion. I think he's definitely, it was a good pick for the Browns.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking, you really don't know what happened. Like, you talk about RG3 or you talk about Lamar Jackson, and then I'm sure they got like some wildcat schemes that would happen where you got both of those guys in the backfield because they can run and you could really open things up.
Right.
But when you don't have a running game that you can get going, and then your quarterback is Joe Flacco and he's not very mobile to begin with, you know, you're worried about Lamar getting hit. I mean, Joe Flacco's a veteran and Kiki whatever hit him. I mean, he's a veteran getting hit. So obviously it doesn't matter who's out there. If you're going to get hit, you're going to get hit. So
yeah, but Joe's a 6'6", 250-pound quarterback. He's a tough.
He's a big guy.
He's a tough SOB, and yeah. Lamar is a pretty
he's
frail
petite frame.
Yeah,
same as RG3,
much smaller frame.
He's more mobile, so it's a give and a take. You know, maybe he's going to get hit, but maybe he knows how to absorb a hit a little bit better because he can get out of the way at the last second, or he can dodge something. You really don't know, but I just think you got to do something, and if Flacco's injured, I'd rather see Lamar out there because that's what you picked him for. Like, if you don't, if they think in their mind that he's not ready to be a professional starting quarterback at this point, then no, don't start him. But I think he wouldn't be in there on these, you know, spot plays here and there if they didn't think he was somewhat ready.
Sam says on YouTube, Sam is one of our big followers, and he's also a huge Louisville guy. So he has been following Lamar his entire career.
Yeah.
And he's saying that Lamar,
I was just about to bring that up.
Yeah, Lamar never had a line in college, which is very true, Sam. The difference in the NFL, though, is
the speed,
the size, everything. And Lamar, albeit it's been a small sample size, but what we've seen in the preseason and what we've seen so far with these gadget plays that he's ran, he's also not taking the big chunk yardage and the big, you know, 30, 40, 50 yard touchdown runs that he was getting pretty much every game on a whim in college, you know, especially his freshman year. So there's differences there. I like his elusiveness. He doesn't ever seem to get hit hard. You know, he does have the ability to kind of absorb and avoid hits just with the way his body moves. But eventually that's going to catch up. And yeah, to kind of go on to your point about the Baker Mayfield thing, when Baker Mayfield came in and took over for Tyrod, you're absolutely right. He came in and he lit it up and, you know, it looked like he was God's gift to Cleveland. I mean, he looked great.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is, once there was tape on Baker Mayfield and tape on the way the Browns offense were going to run around Baker Mayfield, things changed and he wasn't as productive. He's still good. He was not as productive. And it's going to be the same thing with Lamar, is albeit we might get excited if he comes in there and his first start, he lights it up and he throws for 275 yards or 300 yards and throws three touchdowns and runs for 50 yards or something like that. The NFL is a totally different game than it is in college. And once the NFL teams have tape on you and they game plan for you differently, I don't know. That's the big thing that I'm worried about. I know you can't keep training wheels on this guy forever. I get that.
We'll find out this weekend.
I guess we'll find out. Scott, what's your opinion?
Well, the other thing too with the whole Baker thing is when you get rid of the ball in less than 2 seconds or less than 2.5 seconds on every play, and you're doing dump plays over the middle. That's why he was so successful in that game. They weren't prepared for that. Tyrod Taylor was a guy that was going to hold the ball, roll out, look for the deep ball, look for a little bit, you know, longer throw, look for the guy that's, you know, across the middle 20 yards down the field instead of, you know, looking for the dump pass that is 10 yards, you know, down the middle. And that's why Baker was so successful in that game, because like you said, they weren't prepared for it. They weren't able to play for it. But the second that he started, they started showing this pattern, which quarterbacks are like pitchers. They get into patterns. And once you get found on a pattern, it's just going to continue to roll, and they're going to be able to get you all day long. I think Sam said, you know, Sam also says it's a tough decision. I agree with him. Being a, you know, if he's a big Louisville guy, you know, he's big Lamar, he's big on him, but it is a tough decision, because RG3, do you let him show him the ropes, so to speak, or do you just throw him out there and see what he can do? It's going to be a tough call.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of going back to the Joe Flacco injuries, you know, just for you guys out there that don't know, he injured his hip. How severe? The Ravens have been kind of hush-hush on it. There's some people out there that say he won't start this week, there's for sure, and there's some people out there that say he's got a good chance of still starting. So I don't know what that situation is going to end up being like. But there are a lot of fans out there. There's a lot of fans out there. Yeah, and I agree with that. They are definitely playing the cards with Cincy to keep them off balance as to who to game plan for.
It's so annoying with Harbaugh and his like non-informative press conferences.
Yeah, that's part of the downside to Harbaugh and a lot of opinions here in Baltimore. But the thing that's driving me crazy are the fans out there saying that this injury is bogus. That this injury is just them, the kind of pothole scenario that we talk about with the Orioles a lot, you know, with a player tripping in a part, you know,
it's like
in a pothole.
The Joey Rickard, like, finger injury or something. Like,
right. Look, you're not going to do that.
Players walking down Russell Street.
Exactly. You're not going to do that with your highest paid player on your team, the guy that you still have a mathematic chance of getting into the playoffs. And he, regardless of what you think, he gives this team the best chance of being in the playoffs this year. You're not going to do that. So for all those fans out there that are saying this injury is bogus, I think your opinion is bogus. Scott, I mean, do you think there's any truth to that at all?
Look, it's tough to say. Because is this their way of game planning for the Bengals? Is this their way of trying to ease Lamar in a little bit, or RG3 in a little bit more? It's tough to tell. There could be some potential, you know, bogus injury there. I do think it was weird that he didn't take a hit, and now all of a sudden he's got the, you know.
No, he did take a hit. There was a play. It was a sack early on in the Steelers game that he kind of landed awkwardly. I don't know if he actually landed on the football or he just landed like near the football. I couldn't tell, but they actually pointed out a play on social media on Twitter that was going around that showed where he supposedly did hurt his hip and was playing through it for the rest of the game.
He's probably hurt.
And I was just saying he was playing through it with no indication that he was bothered the rest of the game. Let's remember that.
Yeah, but I also think Flacco's a tough SOB. He also played the rest of the game with a torn ACL last year or 2 years ago as well. So
it's like when you have leg day and you feel fine, and then the next morning you can't take a crap because it hurts. It's like, sit down. next day, I don't know. I don't know about you guys, but me.
Oh, man. So what does this do for you guys as far as Flacco going into next year? So we all know that if there's going to be change at leadership, there's probably going to be a lot of cuts at the end of the year, a lot of veterans that you're going to see that are going to be cut to save salary cap and to try to get this team younger in a lot of places. And obviously,
where have I heard that before?
Yeah, right, right. Sounds real familiar in the Baltimore area. But with Flacco specifically, you cut him at the end of the year or you trade him, and that saves you, you know, your $10 million under the cap. If Lamar is going to be your quarterback of the future and you're committed to that, you know, next year's probably what they're looking at for that. What's your opinions on Flacco and maybe his trade value going into next year?
If you can get something for him, I'm perfectly fine. You can trade him. I think he's done after this year. I mean, between the inaccuracies and then the drop balls, it's like kind of compounded his situation because he hasn't been horrible, but he definitely has had enough like short passes for me to be like, what the heck? And then guys dropping him on top of that, it just makes him look even worse.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't think moving forward you're going to pick up Flacco's contract beyond this season. So I think if you can get something, I think he's gone. So, but if you can get something for him via trade, then that's great. But
Scott, what do you think he's worth at this point?
Depends on what you do.
Third round
pick. You have the option to pick it, to pick up, what is it, another year or two on his contract? It's a, you know, team option. So the question is, do you sign him to the option and then go ahead and trade him off so you can actually get more out of it because he's got a deeper contract for somebody? And then you could also agree to, you know, take a little bit of the contract if you needed to. But the other thing that you can also turn around and do is just dump him now. You know, I hate to we joke about it, but it sounds exactly like what the Orioles did. You know, it's dumping to get younger. And I think you're right, Fred. I think you're going to see a lot of these guys go. And I think Joe's going to be the first one. You know, he's going to be the first one that they say no to, whether it's through a trade or whether through it's free, you know, letting him go into free agency. I think you trade him. You get something back for him at least. I'm sure there's a few teams that wouldn't mind, you know, having a quarterback that they can, you know, get under their belt, help them get some young guys going. But it's tough to say. I don't like that. We don't know. We have such big question mark going into next year. So that picking up that option gives you the ability to let whoever, you know, kind of come in and show that it's not Joe and it was Harbaugh. Because that's another thing. If you keep Joe, and as much as I don't want to, if you keep Joe and you have another coach come in fresh and they're able to take Joe and push Joe to another level and not let him be, you know, lackadaisical and he needs to be a little bit more movement in the pocket and things like that, then at that point you can say it was Harbaugh that was pulling this team down. But I don't, it's going to be tough. I think they will dump a lot of guys. I don't know that that's fully the right move, but I think you have to decide what you can get back for him. Do you let him go to that free agency or do you actually get something back for him? Because I think you definitely could get something in return now, at least, you know, a second or third round guy.
Yeah, I think Joe is Joe. You're not going to, regardless of what coach you bring in next, you're not going to get anything out of Joe any more than you've already gotten out of him. He's had 11 years. Regardless of whether it's Harbaugh running the ship or not, he's had multiple coordinators come in. He's had multiple quarterback coaches come in. And yes, he's had a couple of runs and he's had a couple of bright spots in his career. But Joe is what Joe is. Now, on the other side of that, I think Joe would be an attractive piece for some other teams out there. So I think there are some other teams that might value what Joe could bring to a team that might feel that they're just that above average quarterback away from really competing. Some of those teams might be like a Tampa Bay, you know, in that quarterback situation that they've got going on down there. Miami's a pretty darn good football team. Minus the quarterback position.
Yeah, I was thinking Miami.
Yeah.
Started.
Denver's another one. If they don't get one in the draft, you know, I don't think they're very high on Case Keenum right now. There's some other teams out there. Dallas, maybe. I don't think Joe would be great for the Cowboys just because of the mentality and everything that goes around with the Cowboys. But I can tell you now, Jerry Jones is about his wit's end with Dak Prescott, regardless of what happened
this past
week.
What do you got?
Since you brought it up, what about an even trade here? Joe Flacco for Kiko Alonso.
What?
At this point, I don't really want to see the Ravens trading Joe for a player. I want to see the Ravens trading Joe for draft picks because I want to see the team get younger and I want to see the team improve through the draft. And if that means you can take a couple of mid-round draft picks for Joe, maybe a couple of threes or a couple, you know, a three and a four or something like that, or, you know, whatever you can get for him. Like Ryan said, I think at this point you take it. I don't like the appeal of a player for Joe. That's just my opinion on it. But look, at the end of the year, like I said, I think there's going to be a lot of changes. I think the Weddles of the world's going to be gone. Suggs going to be gone. Mm-hmm. I think they'll even dump Yanda to try to save some salary there. A lot of the veterans that have been around for years are going to be gone just to try to get this team.
I feel like you're going to have a rebuild year because
yeah.
you're going to have Ozzie out and Eric in. And I think even though he's been under him all these years, I think he's got a different agenda than Ozzie did. And right. I think you saw that in the draft firsthand. I think you had a little bit of Eric DaCosta's touch on that because they made some moves that they normally wouldn't make
right.
in the past. And I think moving forward, I think 1 year in the NFL of rebuild, you can make a huge difference versus baseball where it might take five or so. So I really think, like you said, you're going to dump some guys, you're going to make some room, and then you might have one bad season where you're like really dreading it. But at least going into it, you know, hey, we're going to get some decent draft picks out of this, and next year we're going to be a whole new team. So,
right. Well, look, I don't want to end the conversation. Go ahead, Scott.
No, you also have to know what you're going to do. You can dump salary all you want, but it's what you then do with dumping that salary. So you really have to look at that as well. Like, okay, yeah, you can have a one-off year, but then you need to turn around that next year and know that you've got that room to go out and get some big, you know, big playmakers.
Yeah.
You know, it's just going to depend on what you wind up doing and what Eric says, you know, is best for the team. And you know, obviously, Bisciotti, I'm sure, will be in his ear the first year, especially.
Right. Well, I don't want to end the Flacco conversation on a bad note. Like, look, there's been a lot of good that Flacco has brought to this organization in the 11 years that he's been here. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that, we are very much like, what have you done for me lately type fans here in Baltimore. And there's been a lot of high notes in my opinion, in Flacco. Things could be a lot worse than Joe Flacco.
Yeah.
Minus, and I put this in the outline, so I gave you guys some time to think about this. So, minus the run, the obvious run in 2012, when he went on the best run of his career and got us our second Super Bowl, what are some fond moments, or even some negative moments, whatever it may be, what are some moments that you may remember most about Flacco's career? Anything that stands out?
Not much. Honestly,
no?
Not for me, no.
Well, here, I'll start right, it off. Go ahead, Scott.
Let me see what you got, and then maybe it'll trigger something.
All right, so my good, he's gotten a local company a lot of money. It's called M&T Bank. He's
done great commercials for them. M&T Bank and Pizza Hut.
The Joe exactly. Flacalicious.
No, I mean, yeah. So no, I mean, if you're discounting the Super Bowl run, he's done well with a lackluster receiving core most of his career. You know, for getting the playoffs, I guess what the last 2 years, you know, he's really kind of struggled. But how many years has Joe been in the playoffs? Minus the Super Bowl run,
right.
He's made several appearances in the playoffs, and it's not just he was on teams that weren't. Defense, you know, mainly defensive teams. You know, while Ray and Ed were still around, it wasn't fully looked at as a defensive team. It was starting to become Joe's offensive team, and it kind of passed the baton over to the offense when Ed and when Ray left. So it really put the pressure on Joe, and I feel that he, you know, kind of stepped up a little bit to that. The bad, obviously, the inconsistencies, and you know what his issues are. The ugly for me would be his ability, his inability to read a defense. Joe has never been, that has never been Joe's strong suit. He's never going to be an Aaron Rodgers. He's never going to be a Tom Brady. He's never going to be that guy that can read the offense and make audibles at the line. You don't hear that out of Joe. We've talked about that before, Fred, about how less often that happens with him versus, you know, guys like Breeze, Brady, and Rodgers. You don't hear him audibling all that much. You sit here and watch TV, you hear all these guys mic'd up, and you're hearing them call out, you know, different, whatever their call sign is, you know, like Breeze with the kill and you know, Manning with Omaha and stuff like that. You don't hear that from Joe as much. And I think that stems from his inability to read a defense. That's my ugly. That's what's killed his career, in my opinion, because that's what gets him in the pocket so long, is he just isn't reading the defense properly. So that would be my good, bad, and ugly.
Well, you did a good job of pumping up the bad and the ugly for me. I don't really have much bad and ugly to top than that. I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head with that. So I'm going to pump Flacco up. I'm going to pump Flacco up a little bit here.
M&T Bank, come on. That's the best good words you can say. Come on.
I'm gonna pump Joe up here a little bit. Just remind everybody a little bit of what this guy has done. I mean, you think back to as early as his rookie year. Mm-hmm. You know, his rookie year, I remember his rookie game. He had the catch touchdown against the Bengals where, you know, he lateraled the ball to Troy Smith and Troy Smith threw him the touchdown and he ran it in, you know,
they were printing t-shirts and it was like, yeah, he can run, he can pass,
or right,
he can catch. Yeah.
Now
he just stands on the line though. You know, it's a long time ago.
But that's something that I'll always remember about him, his very first game that he played. But I mean, beyond that, in his rookie year, he takes the team to the AFC Championship in his rookie season. And that starts a run of 5 years straight where he made the playoffs, AFC Championship or divisional round, 5 years straight. His ability to play at Heinz Stadium, Heinz Field, in Pittsburgh, and I can think of two games in particular where he took the team down on the last drive of the game to win the game in Pittsburgh. The touchdown pass to TJ Houshmandzadeh in the back of the end zone when we had him. The touchdown to Torrey Smith in the back of the end zone when he was here. Two games that I can think of off the top of my head in Pittsburgh that he single-handedly drove the team down in the last minute in one of the most hostile environments against your rival.
When we were at the game, they were up on the
right
screen, that's, at the Steelers game.
Exactly. And then, obviously, we talk about the one Super Bowl run. Hold on a second. Let me pump him up, Scott, before you cut me off. Christ.
I was actually going to give you a good thing.
Yeah, all right. Tagging on. So you had the run in 2012, mm-hmm. but the year prior to that, he takes the team to the AFC championship game in New England and wins the game essentially for the Ravens if Lee Evans doesn't drop that ball.
And then Cundiff.
And Cundiff with the missed extra point or missed extra or field goal.
Field goal.
Right.
Why you guys gotta keep cursing on the show? Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, there's so many other things that, you know, you're a drop pass away from another Super Bowl appearance. There's no guarantees that they would have won the Super Bowl, but they had a damn good team that year.
Yeah.
And you know, like I said, I mean, this team, this is why we get so excited about this team and we're all so passionate about this team, is because of the success that this team has had for a long stretch of time. The Ravens were one of the most feared teams in the NFL for a long stretch of time. Mm-hmm. I understand the frustrations with everybody else, the mediocrity that's kind of taken over these past, you know, 3 years specifically that we haven't made the playoffs, like the but really,
5 years.
Really since the Super Bowl run. Yeah. Right. So things need to change. But look, there's been a lot of good with Flacco and a lot of good things that he's done. I do think his days are numbered here, and I do think at the end of the season we will see him either released or traded. But go ahead, Scott. Tag on to the extra good there that you had.
So the other good thing that you can kind of think about, you know, you brought up Heinz Field. You brought up, you know, we brought up the playoff runs, taking him, you know, in his rookie year. But he's also one of the few quarterbacks to beat Tom Brady in Foxborough in the playoffs twice.
Exactly.
So let's not also forget that, you know, it's getting to the playoffs, but you got to get to the ultimate goal, which is the Super Bowl. But not many QBs can actually say that in the, you know, non-Manning QB era, so to speak.
Right.
I think Tom Brady is 25-5 in the playoffs, and two of those are against Joe Flacco.
Right.
Where everybody
should have been three.
Football and a chance football. Watch those games. Yeah, exactly. It should have been three. But at the same time, for the guy to take five losses and two of them are one QB, and the QB outplayed him that game. It wasn't like the defense, you know, won those games. Defense played a role in those games, but the offense and Joe Flacco won those games. So that is a big, you know, he outplayed Tom Brady in Foxborough in the playoffs, which is just unheard of. So to do it twice is another big, big kudos to him on that.
That's got to be it, though.
Absolutely. That might be it. We might have found every glorious moment from Flacco and his days here in Baltimore, but nonetheless, it's been a good run. Yes, all the good things have to come to an end, and I think we've reached that point here. But
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
5 years dealing with the same crap is a long time in the NFL.
So I agree, but I can't put that all on Flacco's shoulders.
No, it's not.
It
all
starts
on
from the top down, and I think we need an entire shift from the top, and I think that's the direction we're going to end up going.
I just think when you end up paying a guy that kind of money, and he's the excuse why you can't pick up other pieces, it just kind of, the blame falls to him.
Right. Go ahead, Scott.
No, it does. It does. No. So I was just going to say, you know, kind of transitioning, you know, so whether it's Joe, Lamar, RG3, whoever's starting, you know, against the Bengals, what do you guys see as, you know, the game notes that we need to be paying attention to during the Bengals game this weekend?
Well, for me, I mean, the Bengals are on a historic pace for one of the worst defenses in NFL history. I think the Saints set the record a few years ago for the worst defense overall, and the Bengals are on pace to beat that. So you got that working in your favor. AJ Green is questionable whether he's going to play or not. Sounds like he's probably not going to play.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be a huge blow to their offense. Tyler Eifert, obviously being out already and everything, that's another huge target and something that definitely affects the Ravens, because the Ravens are terrible in the middle of the field defensively, and the tight ends usually tear us apart, so not having Eifert's huge. They've also given up, as far as the Bengals defense, they've also given up back-to-back 500-yard games defensively. That's the first time in NFL history that's ever happened. So there are a lot of things that are looking positive for the Ravens, but
they just fired their defensive coordinator.
This is the Bengals, though.
Yeah.
They have our number. Andy Dalton seems to play his best football against the Ravens. Yeah. And they'll keep you hanging on. I think this is going to be another one where it's going to come down to the wire. It's going to come down, but it's all going to depend on who the hell's quarterbacking for the team. You know, if it's Flacco and he does, you know, play this game, I think it's going to come down to the wire. It's going to be another who's got the ball in the last possession type game. Again, it's a do or die situation for the Ravens, and it's the reason that I took the Ravens against the Steelers last week, is I thought in a do or die situation with their backs against the wall that they would come out motivated and play well, but they didn't.
How'd that work?
Yeah, that didn't work out very well. We saw more of the same that we've seen so far for these past couple of weeks. I'm not so doom and gloom on this team. You know, a lot of people are, you know, tearing this team apart from top down. And I get it. I understand, because we're on a 3-game losing streak. But the three teams that we've played and the three teams that we've lost to, they're damn good football teams.
Yes. If you look at the Steelers this past week.
Saints.
The Saints this past week. And then you look at how we played, even the Panthers.
Yeah.
All of those teams, when we played them, we didn't get blown out.
No. But
what was the score?
52-21.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And I'm like, well,
Steelers,
I don't
Panthers.
Feel so bad losing to the Steelers. It sucks, but I'm just thinking, like, it could have been a lot worse. And it looks like we can hold our own against some of the teams that are offensively destroying other teams at this point in the season.
Yeah, and I think you brought up a good point earlier in your analysis of where we're going to be at the end of the year. Even if we get over this hump and looking at the rest of the schedule, we've got a tough schedule to be able to get to 9-7 and really have a realistic chance of being in the playoffs.
Chiefs, the Chargers.
Yeah, Chiefs, Chargers. Now we got, you know, we got the Bengals game this week, and you know, we got a bunch of tough games on the schedule. I don't see this team getting beyond the divisional round of the playoffs, because like you said, they're going to have to beat two of those teams to be able to get to the Super Bowl. Yeah. I do not see that happening, but that doesn't mean that this team can't hold their own. And that's proven that over these last 3 weeks. Yes, they couldn't get it done. They couldn't win those games, but they were in each and every one of those games. So I'm not so, like I said, I'm not so doom and gloom about this team. It's frustrating. It sucks to be in this position yet again. Here we are again talking about we're on the cusp of being eliminated from the playoffs. Scott, what's your take on the situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough not to be, I don't want to say doom and gloom, because I'm not. But it's tough not to be frustrated with everything that you're seeing. It's continual issues. And I guess what's so frustrating is there's sometimes where you can look at things and you can kind of be like, oh, okay, like, you know, all right, it was a bad read. Okay, that was bad. But the play is just been difficult to watch at times. And I think that's what's frustrating to most fans, because we called it for the longest time. Yes, I know we got into the, you know, in for a touchdown. But every time Lamar Jackson's on the field, you knew it was coming.
Right.
We were calling that from week two on. You knew it was going to be a run. You knew that. And you know that they're trying to play that to where at some point he's going to throw the ball for a touchdown, you know, deep down the field, and they're going to bring him in where they're not in the red zone. But that's the issue, is that you see all these things and you see these, and you're like, you know, there's casual fans, and I think we would agree that we're not necessarily casual fans. We're a little bit, you know, higher up than that. We have a little bit more knowledge base and understanding of the game and the way that it's played. But at the same time, casual fans are picking up on that. Oh, Lamar's in. They're going to run the ball. Here we go. You know, you can go sit at any bar and watch a Ravens game, and people will start calling out. People, we were at the bar here, or at the place we were staying at in Orlando. I was sitting there watching the game with a Steelers fan and a Ravens fan, you know, and they sent Lamar out, and he goes, oh, you guys are going to run the ball. This should be easy. And he called it, you know, and he didn't get into, like, I asked him, like, trying to get an understanding of his knowledge base. He didn't get it. He's like, the whole Le'Veon situation, I don't know much about it. You know, he actually said he's just, he's a casual fan. He roots for the team, that kind of stuff. But, you know, that's the type of person that can see that. Anybody can see it, you know, especially guys that are looking at film all day long. And when you're looking at film all day long, it's not just Lamar. It's the defense, too. You know, or the defense, you can start finding the holes. You can know that C.J. Mosley is going to be able to get beat over the middle. And that's the big thing for me this week when it comes down to the Bengals and really moving forward. What do you do defensively to stop some of these teams? The defense has stopped some of the teams that we've played against. And you're right, Ryan, we haven't gotten blown out mm-hmm. in some of these other games compared to some of these other teams. But those other games, what if you had that situation where we weren't getting hit over the middle all game long and C.J. Mosley could actually cover a tight end? You know, that's what I look at and say, do those games become even closer or games that could have been won on the defensive side of the ball? That's just the way that I look at it. I mean, it's I don't want to say it's doom and gloom, because to me it's not, but you have to be, you know, we always talk about being real about the situation. I'm real about it. You know, there's issues and holes that you can see through this team. And if we're picking them out, you better be sure that these professionals are picking them out. And I tell you what, from what I've seen over the past 3 weeks, they are. They're hitting on it every week. So, I don't know. I think I'd like to see the Ravens win. I think it's going to be a close game. We'll get into my prediction here in a minute, but we'll see.
Yeah, speaking of predictions, so we'll chime into that. We're going a little over here. We're a little over an hour into the show already, so let's get into predictions. Last week was not a good week for any of us. We all went 1-2 with our predictions from last week. The Thursday night game had the Panthers at the Steelers, as you just mentioned, Ryan. Steelers win that in an onslaught, 52-21. Ryan and I had that right. Scott, you had that one incorrect, my friend. Sunday night was the game that we all thought Scott would have incorrect, as Ryan and I picked the Eagles to beat the Cowboys, but Cowboys looked like they were a totally different team. Handed the ball off to their workhorse and Elliott quite a bit during this game, and the Cowboys were able to pull one off.
Did you see that leap, by the way?
I did.
The defender.
Pretty impressive. I mean, he was a hurdler in high school. He was actually a state champion at the you know, at hurdling, or whatever you want to say.
Funny story, off topic.
The form was perfect.
So I did indoor track, and we had somebody get like hurt, and they couldn't do the hurdle. And I was like, well, I'll do it. And my lacrosse coach also coached indoor track, and he wouldn't let me. He's like, I can't let you do that. You'll make a fool of yourself. And then whoever he sent out there to do it, they definitely like fell like over like three or four of them. So a coach is like, see what I mean? You don't want to do that.
Yeah, you don't want to embarrass yourself. Like, that's funny. Yeah, not me. You won't ever see me jump over a hurdle at all. But
I probably could have got one, but I think, you know, once you get moving, it would have been like a train wreck. But
right, yeah. So the Cowboys win that one in Philadelphia, 27-20. The Monday night game that we all thought was going to be kind of a just a crappy game to watch ended up actually being a pretty entertaining game as Eli Manning pulled off the game-winning drive there at the end to win it for the Giants over the 49ers in San Francisco, 27-23. We all got that one wrong. We were all on the 49ers and Mullins train there.
Eli Manning, he's like Flacco 2.0.
He really is. They're like mirror images of each other. It's pretty funny.
But
this week's game, let's talk about the Ravens. Let's get into our predictions there. Scott, you want to start that one off with your prediction?
Yeah, mine as well. For me, I got it as a 27-17 game in favor of the Bengals. I think the book's out. Depending on, it's going to really depend on who the Ravens start. I asked you guys before. I think it's going to be a 1.5, basically a 2-score game. I think it's going to be a 10-point game. I chose the Bengals because I don't know who the starting QB is going to be. If it's going to be Joe, I think it's going to be a loss. If it's Lamar, it's maybe a little bit closer game because there's not as much tape on him. And if it's RG3, I think it's going to be even closer just for the simple fact that there is tape on him. However, if there's no tape on him with the Ravens, there's at least tape and you can game plan, you know, his eyes and things like that. So it'll be close. I don't see it being a win here.
All right. So with me, I don't think the injury's fake, but I think the injury is a little bit of a smokescreen. I think it's to throw the Bengals off, as we talked about earlier, you know, to not know who to game plan for. And I think Joe, I've said it already 3 times on the show, he's a tough guy, and I think he's going to manage to get through this, and he'll come out. And I'm going to side with the Ravens here again in a desperation, must-win type game. I'm hoping I'm right. I've got the Ravens winning this in a closer one. I got them winning 30-24. Ryan.
All right. I don't care who plays quarterback. I think the Ravens win this one. The Bengals are slipping. I think it's a great opportunity for us to get in there. I think the defense is going to step up. I think they're going to play well against these guys. AJ Green's not in the picture, hopefully. And I think that's a huge benefit for us.
Watch Tyler Boyd in this game.
Yeah, Tyler Boyd's a problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do think we pull this one off 28-17. I'm trying to be optimistic, but I'm not being a homer. I just think we're going to win this one. I think they're going to get at it. You know, I think they should have practiced during the bye week.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Hey, you're playing like crap. Let's have a day off. Like, I don't know. Doesn't make sense to me.
Scott and I talked about that last week.
I feel like, whatever. but yeah, I think the Ravens, I think they get their stuff together and they pull off a victory on that one, 28-17.
All right. Thursday night football has these two of the teams you thought would probably be in the thick of the playoff run. Packers sitting at 4-4-1 on the year going into Seattle to take on the Seahawks at 4-5. Scott, I'll let you lead off.
I got the Packers 32-21 here. Aaron Rodgers. I don't care if he's in, you know, Seattle or not. It's a loud stadium, but Aaron Rodgers can handle that. So,
yeah, I'm right there with you. I think Aaron Rodgers pulls this one off with some Rodgers magic there at the end of the game. I think it's going to be a close game. But I got the Packers winning this one 28-27. Ryan?
All right, I'm going the other way. Make it interesting. I got the Seahawks winning at home, 12th man. I think they're starting to get in their groove.
Yeah,
Russell Wilson looks pretty good lately, and the Packers are kind of all over the place this season. So right. I think Seahawks, they're on the rise, and the Packers are kind of just lost. So Packers could win, but I'm calling it 31-24 Seahawks.
All right. Sunday night game in Battle of the NFC North. It's got the Vikings sitting at 5-3-1 going in against the red-hot Bears at 6-3 in Chicago, Windy City. Sure, it's going to be cold. Outdoor stadium. I think the Bears pull this one off 24-21. Mitch Trubisky has exceeded my expectations. I really did not think this guy was an NFL-ready quarterback coming out of the draft. I didn't, but he's proven me wrong and proven that I don't know shit about a quarterback evaluation, apparently. He's done really, really well there in Chicago.
Language.
Scott, what do you got going on?
I've got Vikings actually winning this game 27-23. Look, it's the Vikings. They've been playing, you know, pretty well here, 5-3-1. It's going to be a tight game. You're talking about the weather. I do think the weather, you know, it was going to be cold, but these two teams are used to it. The Vikings, I know they play in a dome, but it's really easy in Minnesota to game plan for a cold weather game, just saying.
A lot of truth to that. Ryan?
I like the Bears. Trubisky, like you said, he looked great. I didn't see any of it, but his stat line looked pretty crazy. The guy I was playing fantasy had him, and he had, like, ridiculous amount of points.
So, right.
I think Trubisky's coming around. I think the Bears' defense looks pretty good. And the Vikings, much like the Packers, I think, you know, they look okay, but I also think didn't they lose to, like, the Bills or something?
Yeah.
I don't trust the Vikings yet. So I'm going to go with the Bears. I think they're playing solid, more so than the Vikings. I think they pulled it off, 38-27.
All right. And then the Monday Night Football game, which has been a topic of discussion today, has the 9-1 Chiefs against the 9-1 Rams. This game was supposed to be played in Mexico City, Mexico, but due to the hips won't lie, Shakira concert, and the muddying of the field down there, the players, coaches, and everybody involved, not happy with the field conditions and a little worried that that may cause some unnecessary injuries. So it sounds like they've moved this game to L.A. So this is going to be a home game for the Rams in the Battle of the Titans, 2 9-1 teams. I think this is going to come down to whoever's got the ball last. And I think this might even come down to a field goal type situation. It's going to be a high scoring game. You know, Chiefs defense, awful. But their offense is lethal. So I think their offense keeps them in, and I think the Chiefs pull this off on the road, 42-40. Scott?
I've got it going the other way. I've got this a Rams win, but I don't have it nearly a high-scoring game like you do. I've got this 29-20, still a decent score game, but I think it's going to be the Rams put it out of reach, you know, right in the fourth. And I'm going to say the defense is the one that is actually, you know, the Rams defense is going to win this game. There's going to be a pick six that's going to put it out of reach for the Chiefs.
All right, Ryan.
I like how we're all picking different teams this week.
Which is kind of rare.
We mix it up. Yeah, usually back when me and Fred were doing it, it was like the same thing.
Every week. Like, not intentionally. It just worked out that way.
I'm taking the Chiefs. I got Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce on my fantasy football team. I need them to win. I need a lot of TDs. And I'm going 41-35 Chiefs.
All right.
I think it'll be a good game. I think that's going to be like a game everybody's going to want to see. I'm glad they didn't have to push it back.
All right. Well, just a quick social media shout out. I'm sorry I'm not monitoring all of the social media feeds because I'm on my own here in the studio as far as monitoring goes. But just a quick shout out to Sam. Appreciate you tuning in on YouTube. Troy, we see you, brother. Hector, if you're still out there watching on YouTube, man, appreciate you tuning in. On Facebook, I know I've seen Greg Trotta. Good to see you in on the chat room. James, as always, my friend. Sherry, appreciate you being in here as always. Nikki, I saw you earlier. Scott, anybody I've missed?
I did see Connor on YouTube. I've just been monitoring some of the YouTube comments since I got one monitor space for you at least, and nothing on Twitter. I've been checking in on Twitter every once in a while. So,
all right. Let's move on to some Terps football, and we talked in the beginning of the show. Terps missed out on a big, big opportunity here to become bowl eligible, which would have been a big victory in what's been a pretty tumultuous. What's that word?
I don't know what you just said.
Too much. That's a word.
I'm not even going to try.
Didn't want to come off the end of the tongue. It's been a troubling year at College Park. We'll just put it that way. Gene's going to give me a ton of crap because I always mess up on certain words, and he likes to point that out. But
you got to work on those SAT words.
Yeah. They're going in to Indiana with a chance to lock up their sixth win of the year. They got a couple of games coming up against Ohio State and Penn State, which you can pretty much check those off as L's. So if they were going to get to bowl eligibility, it went through Indiana. We talked about it last week. They have a really balanced offense. They've got a good running game. They've got a good passing game, and that kind of held true in this game. big thing was that the Terps needed to win the turnover battle in this game, and they weren't able to do that. And we wanted to see the Terps passing game get going in this game. And unfortunately, Kasim Hill gets injured in this game again. Sounds like he's going to be out for the remaining portion of the year.
Second year in a row
that he's gone down with a knee injury. Scott, I don't know. Did you get a chance to keep up on this game at all? Did you read up on it or see any of it?
Just catching the highlights afterwards. I wish I would have been able to watch it. But no, I mean, the big thing that I saw obviously was Hill going down in the first half. Like you said, he'll be out for the rest of the season. You know, I know they were trailing and then kind of picked it up a little bit in the fourth with Pigram, or as you like to call him, Piggy.
Yeah.
Piggy throwing it out to Deshaun Jones, who's been kind of silently been really, really well for this team at the wide receiver, you know, or I'm sorry, not wide receiver, but as far as receiving, you know, he's been doing really well as far as that goes. But outside of that, I mean, not a whole lot that I was able to see. I know that they also missed that extra point, but I'll let you talk about that a little bit more because I didn't get to see it.
Yeah, I mean, this was a stretch of a lot of ups and downs in this game. I mean, Indiana had three touchdowns in a 4.5 minute stretch in the first half, really put up some numbers, and then, you know, Maryland kind of buckled down a little bit on the defensive side. But, I mean, Peyton Ramsey had great numbers in this game. He had 243 yards passing, two TDs. He also had a 35-yard rushing touchdown. He did have the one interception. And then their running back, Stevie Scott, with 103 yards rushing on 19 carries and a touchdown. Again, that just kind of goes to show the balance that this team had on offense. I was pretty pleased with Piggy, Terrell Pigrams.
How many P's are you going to get in that?
I was pretty pleased with the way he played, considering, you know, coming in, kind of thrust it in the middle of the game. He ends up coming in, going 10 for 13 for 146 yards and a touchdown. But the big telling story in this game was the turnovers. You know, Maryland with four turnovers, including the game-winning strip sack of Piggy, and then fell short on a 42-yard field goal by Logan Justice with just 2:32 to play. Between the turnovers and special teams, there was a missed extra point. They had a failed two-point conversion in this game. It was a sloppy game by the Terps overall. I think the one real bright spot in this game, obviously Anthony McFarland, as a freshman, this guy continues to tear things up. I mean, on 29 rushing attempts, he had 210 yards, and he broke former Terp Lamont Jordan's freshman record for rushing yards in a game. He also is the first Terp rusher with three 100-yard games as a freshman. So, I mean, this guy's putting up numbers, but Scott and I talked about at the beginning of the year, this was a team that was built around the running game and a team that had a stable of running backs, but they are just dropping like flies in College Park. I mean, they've had injury after injury.
Lately.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, Ty Johnson was out this game with another injury as well. So, I mean, it's been one injury after another. And now you've got this week, Ohio State comes into College Park at 9-1, the number 8 ranked team in the country. This one's probably not going to be too good for the Terps. What's up, Scott?
Fred, who are you rooting for?
I'm still, you know, look, I love both teams, and when they're going against each other,
you have to make a choice.
No, when they're going against each other, I will pull for the Terps, but I'm a realist. The Terps have no shot in this game, and that's not because I'm a Buckeyes fan. That's just looking at the two teams and seeing the state. I mean, this is a game that it'll be lucky if Maryland could keep this within a 20-point game.
Wonder what the over-under is.
I think
Ryan, can you confirm that he's doing the tiger pump under the table?
I don't know. He was playing footsies earlier. So
well, we talked about him earlier in the year. Local star Dwayne Haskins comes back to College Park. You know, Dwayne had committed to the University of Maryland at one point and then kind of shunned the Terps to go to Ohio State, which was, you know, he did grow up in the DMV area, but he was a Buckeye fan as a kid. So it was kind of his dream to go to Ohio State. And he isn't disappointing. I mean, the guy's throwing at a 70% completion clip right now, and just under 3,300 yards on the season with 33 touchdowns. You know, you take that one loss, that one kind of blip on the radar for the Buckeyes, and he's in the Heisman conversation. I mean, there are some guys out there that are putting up a little bit better stats, but yeah, Scott.
He's able to do that too, though, because of the fact that, you know, he's got it's Dobbins, right? That's a running back. Mm-hmm. He's got what, seven touchdowns, something like that.
Yeah, he's got 700 yards on the season and seven touchdowns. I mean, again, they're a good offense, very good offense all around. I think if there's any kind of holes that you can poke in this team, it's definitely on the defensive side. I mean, their offense, again, is putting up over 40 points per game and 525 total yards of offense every game. You're not going to do a whole lot to slow that down, especially if you're the Terps.
The spread's only 14.
Yeah.
So it's not too bad.
I don't see that. I don't see that holding true. We'll see. But, I mean, with the Buckeyes, they've got a young, very young defense, a lot of freshmen and sophomore. They did give up 26 points to Indiana, 49 to Purdue, and 31 to Nebraska. So, I mean, they are vulnerable to give up points. And if the Terps can show a little bit more in the passing game, now with Pigram at quarterback versus Hill, you know, with Hill there in the beginning of the season, they weren't throwing the ball at all.
Hardly at all.
I mean, they were just strictly running the ball. And you give any team, we've talked about this before, Scott, you give any team the antidote to your product is to just stack the box. I mean, that's all you can do is run the football. I'm going to put eight men in the box and make you beat me deep. And with this team, that's what they've done. I mean, that's every defense has just stacked the box against us and shut us down. And when you got a team like Ohio State, young or not, they've got a lot of quick, athletic guys that can get to the ball carrier.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would 100% agree with that. We've said that before, and that's what you're going to have to see. And that's why Ohio State, and I think you agree, this game is not going to be, you know, an easy game for the Terps to win, just if they even can even get close, just for the simple fact that Ohio State is a more well-rounded team. Like you said, the defense is kind of your most vulnerable, but even still, you know, it's teams that they're. I mean, they only give up 26 to Indiana, but we just give up 34 to Indiana.
Right.
So that's the big difference. So we'll see.
Yeah, and just quickly to highlight it real quick, because we don't really talk a whole lot about it because the season just started, and we'll get more into it as the season progresses. But the Terps basketball season has kicked off. I saw James just make a comment about the Terps basketball. So I do want to highlight that real quick. Terps have started the year off 3-0. Now, granted, they haven't played the best of competition right now. I mean, they've played, they played Delaware in their first game, which was kind of a feeling out game for the team, getting used to, you know, the Terps are loaded with a bunch of young talent. This kid, Jalen Smith, that they got is a five-star McDonald's All-American, has played great. They call him Sticks. This guy's like, I want to say he's like 6'8" or 6'9", and I mean, he's like 200 pounds. I mean, he's literally like sticks and bones, but man, the guy's a hell of an athlete. He looks like he could be, I don't want to say a one and done kind of guy, because I think he needs some development and he still needs to put on some size before he'll be able to compete at the NBA level. But, you know, Kevin Huter went in the draft a lot earlier than I thought he would go as well. So we'll see what happens there. But the Terps have started off 3-0 on the basketball front so far. And again, we'll get in more into them as the season progresses. But let's talk a little
bit
about
their first big test, by the way.
Go ahead.
Sorry, their first big test, by the way, is going to be really honestly isn't going to be until you hit the 28th of this month when they go against Virginia, who's ranked number 4. And then 2 weeks, I think, like not even a, I think I want to say like 8 or 10 days later, if that, they're going to go up against Purdue, who is ranked I think 23rd right now in the power rankings, but those are going to be their two tests. You could go, you know what, I guess 7-6-0, and then it's going to be what you do against Virginia that's going to make or break or show what a ranked team can do against this Maryland basketball team.
Yeah, and if Maryland wants to compete with the Virginias of the world, they've got the size and they've got the athleticism, but they've got to clean it up from three-point land. That's the one thing that I've noticed in the couple games that I've watched is they're getting clean shots, but for whatever reason, they're not falling. They're not shooting at a very good clip from beyond the arc. So that's something that they're going to have to clean up for when they start playing, you know, the bigger, the tougher teams and that kind of thing. And like you said, Virginia is going to be the first real test. I mean, that's one of the top teams in the nation. Obviously, they're coming off of a pretty disappointing year, getting eliminated in the first round of the NCAA tournament by UMBC. So they got a lot of, I'm sure, anger and hostility built into them to prove that that was a fluke and that they can get back and be in contention for the title again this year. But we'll see what happens. Let's talk a little bit about some fantasy football. Catch everybody up on how things are going in the Birdland BS League. Which, Ryan, you haven't really been on the show much since we've started the year. So kudos to you as you continue to do good things, you and the wife, in this league. As you beat Brian this week, 139-95, you ended up scoring the most points in the league, which I think is the second, if maybe even third time you've done that this year. I'm not 100% sure.
No big deal.
But when it comes playoff times, all it takes is one loss, Ryan. It's all it takes is one loss. But what's going on in the Hewitt household this week? You're going up against the wife.
Yeah.
Number one seed in the league right now.
You know, I basically help her draft this team, and now I got to go up against it. But
she's got a stacked team.
She's got a pretty good team.
She's got a good team.
She's made a lot of good decisions, waiver pickups with Murray and a couple other guys. She's done really well. I basically told her, she's up like two wins or three wins on everybody. So I said, you basically should lose this week because for the household, it's better if I win because then we both can get in the playoffs. And I don't know that I can afford a loss this week because I might.
This show is recorded. So that is on the air. Nah, we recorded
fine.
That.
We're going to go heads up. And once she gets a kicker on her roster, our matchup looks pretty even, so it'll be a good game. She's got Thielen, she's got Kamara, she's got a stacked team, so it'll be a good matchup. I'm a little worried about it.
All right, Scott, you were saving face there, sitting at 3-6. You were kind of in the Ravens spot where you had to win to keep your playoff hopes alive. You went against Troy and was able to pull that one off, 125-99.
Yeah, I was hoping and praying on that one because it came down to the Monday night game with Philly, or it was a Philly Dallas game, the Sunday night game. I'm sorry. When I had Ertz going,
okay, he's
and
got Ertz.
He had Alshon Jeffery going.
Yeah, Ertz had a huge game.
Ertz had like 40 points, I want to think, or something.
Well, it was like two touchdowns and 150 yards.
35. Yeah, I mean, he had like 14 catches and two touchdowns. Some of these PPR leagues that are full point or whatever, this guy scored over 40 points. It's crazy.
I like the
from
addition.
A tight end.
I've been in leagues with Fred for like forever, and we've never had PPR.
Right.
And the half point is like huge. I love it.
Yeah.
Because it just – and then the percentage points. Like we used to do, like if you didn't get up to 10 yards, you didn't get the point. So now it's like I mean there's more points – but I think it's a lot more fun.
I do, too. I'm right there with you. So I think that's something we'll definitely keep around for years to come.
There's not as many blowouts either as in a PPR league. PPRs, you tend to have a lot more blowouts than you do in a half point or no PPR, just for the simple fact that, you know, guys who aren't playing a huge role in the game getting points just for catching a one-yard pass.
Right.
No, so, I like that, though. I mean, I'm a big fan of how this is going. Plus, I'm in second place, so I'm not going to complain.
Well, I went up against Jess, sitting at 4-5. I was kind of desperate for a win here too.
You had like a little bit of a comeback.
Yeah. I didn't think I was going to pull this one off, but
Elliot went to town.
Yeah, Ezekiel Elliott had the couple of touchdowns and had a really good game. I think he had like 140 yards rushing in that game as well. So I ended up beating Jess 119-110. So I'm 5-5 on the year going up against Brian this week. Scott, you're up against Joe Carluzzo. And again, Ryan, you're up against the wifey, Christy. Ryan, I mean, like I said, you scored 139.76 points. Breida tore it up for you. He had 37. Mm-hmm. Mahomes, Mr. Consistency at 21. And Mark Ingram at 24 points. So yeah, I mean, not just those three guys. You had a pretty good roster from top down to bottom. I don't think you really had any holes in your roster. No, so
I'm going to pull it up for you.
Kudos to you and your team. Baltimore League, the league that we do with all the other podcasters and bloggers out there. We were at 6-3 going into this week. Went up against Cole Jackson. Cole Jackson, you can find him on Twitter at Cole Jackson RSR. He's a columnist for Russell Street Report. Our team did not show up this week, Scott. They decided to take the week off along with the Ravens as we lost that game 85-131.
Oh my.
That's the first time in that league that we have not scored over 100 points. We are by far still in the lead as far as total points in that league goes, but our record now sits at 6-4, and we're in third place. And this week we go up against Mitchell Wolfman. Follow him on Twitter at Northern Flock. He's one of the Canadian Ravens fans and also a contributor for the Russell Street Report. Good guy, always has an opinion. Will always chime in on any kind of conversation or talk to you if you hit him up. So make sure you follow him at Northern Flock. I like the way we're sitting there, Scott. You know, all we got to do is get in. I think our team will do well come a playoff run.
I think there's, what, 3 weeks?
Yeah, we need to get into that playoff. We need to have it.
Right.
So 3 weeks till the playoffs. Oh, 2 minute warning.
That's right.
It's time for the 2 minute warning.
I haven't done this in a few weeks.
No.
Like,
what have you guys been doing?
Slacking.
Jeez. And then you give it to me. Like.
All right, Ryan. You are on the clock this week for the 2 minute warning. And your 2 minutes, it starts now.
All right, so I had this last, but Fred yelled at me and said I can't do it because Scott will give me crap because it's negative. But apparently this past week, Patrick Mahomes' girlfriend's stepfather died at the game or prior to the game. It's pretty crazy. But in other news, Patrick Mahomes just broke like the touchdown record for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
So this kid's nuts. Like, what are the Ravens doing?
Right.
So, also, we talked about it a little bit earlier, the NFL – you know, obviously, they're going to move that game from Mexico City to L.A. due to the field conditions. I had this written before it was actually official, and I didn't know we were going to talk about it. Also, in other news, Pittsburgh Steelers, Le'Veon Bell is out. He didn't report today, and he leaves $14.5 million on the table. Looks like he's going to be a free agent next year because it doesn't seem likely that the Steelers will franchise tag him again because it'd be about $25 million for next season if they do a third tag. In hockey news, the Capitals' Tom Wilson is eligible to play. I think it's arbitrators. Reduced his suspension from 20 games down to 14, so he can actually play tonight. Ohtani wins the American League Rookie of the Year for the Angels, and Ronald Acuna wins the National League Rookie of the Year for the Braves. Also spoke about this earlier, doing really well. The Browns signed former, not the Browns, geez whiz. Cincinnati Bengals signed former Cleveland Browns head coach Hugh Jackson to a special assistant position under Marvin Lewis. Also, the Bengals and the Browns still have two divisional games against each other, so I'm sure that'll prove to be helpful.
Right.
Moving forward. That's all I got, man. I ran out.
Well, that's all right. We're right here. It's over.
I'm looking over there, and there's like, I'm looking at the delay, and there's like 20 seconds, and I'm thinking, man, I got 20 seconds.
But how the heck am I ever going to fill this time?
I filled it up with like. Yeah,
Scott and I usually have way too many topics to talk about. We'll have like three or four or five things left when we write it down.
Like, two of them, and then we talked about them. So I was like, crap. I was literally – I don't think anything crazy – like usually there's a lot more to talk about, but it just seemed like it was pretty tame week.
Right. And absolutely. But appreciate you coming in the studio.
Yeah.
And being here with us this week.
See you in like 6 months.
Yeah, man. That seems to be the trend of things.
Yeah, it's not that bad.
Scott, the internet connection held up for the entire show, so glad you could join us from down there in the warm weather in Florida.
Yeah, I'm glad he was here.
Yeah, man. It was definitely a great show. It's good to have Ryan on again. So we've got to get all three of us in there at some point where one we're day. All in the studio
right.
so that we can do it.
All right, Scott, well, take us out of here, man.
Yeah, we want to remind everybody to check us out on www.birdlandbs.com. You can check out our episodes, learn about each of us, contact us. Check out the Birdland BS gear. I got the hat on. I got the shirt on here. Cut off the sleeves from while I was in Florida.
I saw that.
Get actual tank tops if you want. Then you can check us out, too, on birdlandsports.com. We're on there with a bunch of other podcasts. We're doing great. There's enough content every day of the week for you. It's for fans, by fans. Follow us on all of our social media accounts on Twitter at BirdlandBS, at FredBLBS, at ScottBLBS, at RyanHewitt84. If you want to go follow him, go check that out.
Don't do it.
Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Check us out. Just search BirdlandBS. You'll find us. Like, follow, and subscribe on there. And be sure to share to be a part of BirdlandBS.
Fred.
Ryan.
See you guys.
Wait.